exceptionnel.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. And for the first time in about a month, we've got a full complement. We welcome Brian Campion back into the fold from his isolation den in the west of Ireland. Brian, how you doing?
A lot better. Pretty good now.
Good stuff. And then we have Alex Kulesh as well, who is giving us some daily Instagram updates of cooking with Kulesh. How's your skills coming along? Is the Michelin star on its way?
Well, actually, the hashtag at the moment is Corona Cooks. So we've moved on slightly from cooking with Kulesh. It's going pretty well. I think improving daily, and if you do want to follow, do just follow the hashtag on Instagram for some insight into daily life.
How are you spending your time in the west of Ireland, Brian?
I basically, when I came back from Austria, I kind of locked myself out into the side part of the house. So I've been talking to my parents through a window. So it's been fairly lonely, you know, and lots of lonely walks in the woods. So hasn't been the most exciting time, no.
And I hear you have a story to tell us as well.
I do, yeah. I don't think I'm going to name this person now, but he's a person that you know very well, Chris, from Vienna. Let's call him DT. Let's just say that. Okay. And, I was asking him about the situation in Vienna and isolation. He was telling me all the, because I left and then he stayed, and he was giving me the whole breakdown of what was happening there. And he was telling me that his brother went back to England to live with his mother for a while. I went back to live in the house. He lived in England already, sorry, but went back to his mother's house to stay there for a while. And his, this is not family friendly. I'm just going to give everyone a bit of a warning there.
But so anyway, skip forward if you're not,
jump forward about 2 minutes if you're not. No, he got an email one day that he had ordered something off Amazon. And so he went in and checked on Amazon what that was. And he'd seen that it was a dildo. And his mother had ordered a dildo and clicked on the wrong account. So he's in a situation now where he's to tell his mother that he needs the money back for the dildo. Oh, God. I mean, the coronavirus brings people together, but Jesus Christ.
Oh my god.
But imagine that. Imagine you get that email and you're sitting there and you know what it is, but you can't tell her yet. And then all of a sudden you see this package come through the door and you know what it is. And you're just like, oh my god, I can't do anything. I wouldn't say anything. I think I'd just leave it as a present and just be like, and then if for her next birthday, she'd be like, you never got me a birthday present. I'd be like, I did get you a birthday present. I got you a birthday present.
You'd get a packet of batteries or something.
Yeah. There's the top you up. From one sticky hole to another one. Oh, but the Olympics been cancelled, huh? Oh god. Now maybe let's start with the domestic leagues. I think Alex, you had a bit of an overview there, did you?
Well, since our last episode, there's been a lot of developments in how leagues are treating this whole situation. I think last time we spoke, which was about 2 weeks ago, it was all up in the air. There was kind of partial suspension, some leagues hoping to be back up in April, May. And that has, you know, that has significantly moved on in quite a lot of cases. So we do have the EHF Final Four, EHF Final Four now moved to August. But across Europe, we're also seeing full cancellations of leagues. And, you know, ranging from leagues like Slovenia and Poland, where they cancel the league, but then they also crown a champion and say that there's no relegation. But other leagues like Austria and Sweden are not crowning a champion for the year. But in almost all cases, there's no relegation. But I think across the major leagues, so Bundesliga, the French League, Danish, Hungarian, it's mostly only suspensions until the end of April or the start of May at the moment. But I don't see how they could finish these leagues in due time. But what do you think about that whole thing of whether to crown a champion or not?
I think they shouldn't crown a champion. I think it's a bit... I mean, you didn't finish the league. You didn't win the league. And do you think the players are going to be really pumped about winning the league like that? I don't think so. I don't think it's... I mean, if someone like, for example, Chelsea winning it, and then Poitsk must be absolutely... Well, not kicking themselves, obviously, but they must be just kind of... I feel like they're owed something in a way, because I feel like they haven't been robbed. But I mean, they weren't that far away from Chelsea, and they're probably the closest they've been in the last few seasons. So they'd be a bit annoyed about that. So I don't see the benefit really of doing it, really, unless you just want to have a name on that year. A name on that year that will always have an asterisk beside it. So I wouldn't do it that way. I don't know what you think, Chris.
I think for certain leagues like that, when, like in Poland, you're getting the gold medal, as you will, it's not exactly the way you want to win it. And probably when you look back at it, nobody's going to really care about teams that won a championship that year. In Norway, for example, they Elverum won the league, and they got a title for winning the regular season, and then they just called off the playoffs. So I think in cases like that, it's pretty straightforward that you gave a team a championship. I think it's the same with the Vipers in the women's league there. And in Sweden, though, they have the whole playoff system as well. They decided not to do it. I think probably not naming a champion was the easiest way to go, because in the end, it's up to the, when it comes to things like nominating teams for European competition next season, it's up to the federations anyway, so they can just say who they want to nominate for the Champions League or the European Handball League, I think the second tier competition is called. So yeah, it's not, I mean, I don't think when we look back at this we're going to care so much about which teams won the league, because there are more important things at this time.
And do you think the EHF is now licking their lips at a potential new Champions League format filled with wildcards, so they can just pick and choose exactly which teams they drop into the next year's Champions League?
I think for the first nine teams are based on the countries. And so, yeah, I don't know how exactly that's going to be done. I think that's up to the federation to nominate. But then after that, yeah, it's there'll be a number of, I guess, wild cards, so to speak. Yeah, I think that's a tricky situation to talk about now, because, well, we don't even know whether there'll be an end of this season. I think that's probably not at the forefront of the EHF's mind at the moment. So they're probably not licking their lips. They're probably more worried about getting the Final Four is over with now, or at some point this summer.
Well, one league that is still going is the Belarusian Championship, which just this week had an amazing title decider. And I'm just going to set the scene for you, because it's actually, you know, I haven't looked into the Belarusian league that much. And this may be because there's only six teams in the first division. Two of these teams you may have heard of. One you've definitely heard of. This is Meshkov Brest. And you all will know them from leagues such as the Champions League and the Seha League, where they have been prominent in the last couple of years. And actually, they are six-time running champions of the Belarusian League. And their main competitors are SKA Minsk, a team that is filled with history. They're multiple time champions of the Belarusian League, but as well as the Soviet League in the early 80s, and even some European success. They won the league for 10 years straight from 1992 until 2002. And that's when Meshkov Brest took over as the new face of Belarusian handball. And really, SKA Minsk have been behind for so long. But this ended last year, as for the first time in 6 years, we saw SKA Minsk winning the Belarusian Cup, disrupting the constant streak that Meshkov Brest have. And going into the final five rounds of the Belarusian League, the two teams were tied on 42 points, although Meshkov Brest did have two games in hand. A win for SKA Minsk would really put them in a good position to really drive towards the end of the championship in a good place. The game took place on Saturday at the home of SKA Minsk in front of not very many spectators. And I don't know whether that was due to the coronavirus or the popularity of the SKA Minsk team in Belarus. A titanic matchup started. It was neck and neck for the first 15 minutes, but in the second 15 minutes of the first half, Meshkov Brest really pulled away with Shkurinsky absolutely lighting it up for Meshkov Brest with five goals in that first half. And that really made it kind of an insurmountable lead going in 20-13 at halftime to Meshkov Brest. What could SKA Minsk do? Well, they tried their best, but they didn't close the gap. Even though Nikolenko had seven goals in the game, that wasn't enough. And Meshkov Brest won the game 40-32. Basically clinching the title for this Meshkov Brest team.
Nice report, Alex. Well, you can't say that we don't cover all of the handball going on at the moment, because that was all of the handball going on at the moment. Thank you. Did you watch the entire game, Alex?
I watched mainly the second half. I wasn't able to find a stream for a long time, and I had to use a couple of VPNs to get onto the Belarusian website to watch it. But it was a pretty exciting game, I have to say.
Nice, worth the effort. There you go. So is that mean that the Belarusian League is now actually completed?
No, so there are still five games remaining, or four games remaining, sorry, for Meshkov Brest. But this is against the other four teams in the league, which are really kind of irrelevant. So while Meshkov Brest aren't crown champions yet, they basically are.
Now, I want to get your opinion on the Champions League, because we spoke about the domestic leagues being cancelled or just stopped early and crowning a champion. But in the Champions League for men and women and the other European competitions, they're planning on pushing ahead with it, the EHF, with a preliminary date set in the beginning of June to start playing the knockout rounds throughout June and the beginning of July, I think. And then, as Brian mentioned earlier, the Champions League for men, the Final Four in Cologne will be in the middle of August. And the week after that, the EHF Cup Finals. And the week after that, the first week in September, will be the Women's EHF Final Four in Budapest. Now, if this continues on throughout June and July, the coronavirus, then what was hinted, or what was, I guess, more than hinted in the interviews that Michael Vieder has done over the last week or so, is that they'll use the results from the rounds that have already been completed to decide which teams progress. So if this virus and this pandemic continues to shut everything down throughout June and July, we may be in a situation where the men's Champions League, the top two teams from Group A and B, could be the teams that go to the Final Four. Now, on paper, it looks like a pretty tasty Final Four with Barca, PSG, Kiel, and Veszprém. And for the women, you have Metz, Esbjerg, Dürr, and Brest. What do you make of that, guys?
I would come back to the point of, I don't think it's going to happen, first of all. I don't think that there will be enough of a clear-up in this virus for June and July. If anything happens, it'll be that second scenario where they just pick the best teams and they play in August. And then you run into the problem. So to answer your question, yeah, it looks very tasty on paper. Yeah, that's the first bit. But do I think it's going to happen? I don't think so. I think it's going to get too complicated. And then I'm also thinking, why would you have it in August with all the problems that it would bring up for players, for clubs, and individuals like that? In a lot of those interviews that Michael was given, he was talking a lot from a business perspective. It all sounded very business. There was very little in the whole health and safety of players and people surrounding the clubs. It was very much, we need to keep the business going and support the clubs. But if you have a Final Four like that, you're only supporting four clubs, and you're supporting four very rich clubs anyway. So it's not really supporting the teams. Or for me, the leagues would be more important, that you get the leagues back up and run again, which is definitely not going to happen, you know, in the next, at least in the next 2 months. So it's most likely that all the leagues will be cancelled, I think, over the next few weeks. Mm. So to me, it's kind of the reason, like, why would you even have the Final Four on? Is it just to have it? But it's obviously then, from a financial perspective, makes a lot of sense for them to make sure they do have it. But having it in August seems like just more trouble than it's actually worth. And a lot of the stuff that players are saying, they don't even understand it themselves. They're saying it's not a very well thought out solution, it doesn't make sense, and I don't even know why you'd have it, because you're just encroaching on the next season, which is going to be already jam-packed with things, having a World Championship, two Final Fours, and the Olympics all in one season, and then you're pushing the Final Four at the beginning of the next season. It just seems like, I don't know, when we're talking about overburdening players, it sounds like next season is going to be absolutely crazy.
I really don't understand it either. Although the players are getting, technically, they might get a summer break now. So, you know, it is just moving that summer break a bit earlier, but it just makes it, the next season, an absolute monster. Starting from, you know, with tough games starting from August, going all the way through the summer with the Olympics on as well. I don't think it's fair on anyone to just pick the top four teams and put them through to the Final Four. And I don't, you know, all it is, I'm just repeating it, but you said it's just financially focused. I think if you want to complete the Champions League, you have to give every team a chance, and you have to think outside the box. You could hold a single elimination tournament for the remaining teams, and I think that would be the fairest way of doing it.
I'll hire the boat now, shall I?
Yeah, because if you're going to pick the top teams in the season, you'd have to put Dynamo Bucharest in there, wouldn't you? I mean, best results, and because otherwise you're saying groups like D and E are just forget about them.
D and E
or D&F. those groups that no one cares about. No, then you're just basically admitting that they mean nothing, and they're second tier. Which was always thought of, but was never actually vocalized.
But considering a team won the Champions League from Group C and D 2 years ago, it's not really fair to say. Yeah, very good points you made. But what I want to ask both of you is, if it came down to it, then, and if this virus continues to cancel everything and keep us all locked in throughout May and June and July, would you rather see nothing at all in August or a Final Four as has been laid out in the contingency plan for the EHF?
I just don't see still how it would even work, you know, with so many players swapping clubs around. Mm-hmm. There's going to be certain players in certain situations where they've either changed club that they qualify for whatever. Let's just say like Kiel go through, and then a player leaves Kiel, and then they qualify for the Final Four, but then can't play in the Final Four because they're under contract from whenever, in the summer onwards, whenever they sign their contract. Normally it's like July, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or someone like, if Vesprem go through, like you said, well, like, as one of the best teams, someone like Sterbik, who's meant to be retiring, does he play that then? Or what kind of situation? That's probably an easier situation to solve. He probably would just play it. But then does he need a new contract for that part and stuff like that? I don't know. There's a lot of players in that kind of situation, like the meme I put up with Sagosen, you know, that's probably the classic example. Mm-hmm. What happens to players like him? So you could have him in a situation where he qualifies for with PSG, and then he plays for Kiel at the Final Four, which is a bit of a mess. So you have the teams from the next season winning the medals from the last season. So in my head, it doesn't really make any sense. You know, I think things should be always kind of like, that was your squad for that season. Yeah, transfers within that season, sure. But winning medals with a team for the next season, for the past season, just seems a little bit unrealistic. I just can't see how they'd work out all those issues, you know, unless they just say you play for the team that you transferred to or for whatever you're under contract. Because players aren't going to be jumping back to their previous team. That will never happen. So it's a weird situation.
As a fan, I'd love to see a Final Four. You know, I'm desperate for any handball at the moment. And seeing this thing happen, but again, it would be so random, you know. It would be a championship with an asterisk. It's handpicking the best teams of this year. Okay, I suppose it's not necessarily handpicking because they have earned their spots, but none of the teams knew they were playing for the Final Four when they were in group stage. They, you know, there was Szeged who could have finished second in the group, but they ended up playing a midweek match against Flensburg, where they had played three games the week before and they just absolutely collapsed. And that's what decided that that positioning in that group. So I just don't think it's fair. I don't think it really benefits anyone. Like, how much... I think the revenue that the teams have missed out on is already extremely significant. And this extra little boost of revenue isn't going to save anyone.
But you're right. The teams that are making it to the Final Four aren't teams who are really in need of a cash injection. You know, the teams that are really struggling are, you're talking about probably more like teams like bottom of the Bundesliga and stuff like that. They're the teams that need the league and need to sell tickets every week to get fans into the hall, sell jerseys, whatever else. So the whole argument of having it from a financial perspective is only for, I think, it's only really in the EHF's interest and those top clubs. You know, it's not, there's no trickle down effect here for teams who are lower in the leagues. You know, they've already suffered, as you said.
Yeah, to be honest, I would think the fairest thing to do is to cancel it.
Yeah, but let me ask you this, or ask you both of you this now. I know neither of you are doctors, unless you've been hiding something from me. But what kind of situation can you imagine that we'll be in where you can actually hold a tournament like that or get leagues going again? Because from what I've been reading, it sounds like this, while it may drop off in the summer somewhat, it's going to be around for quite some time, you know? And it's more like the odds are that it will be to be some case of it next winter. Could you actually book an event knowing that a few days before an event, players get this? And then what do you do with the event? Let's just say you book the Final Four with Kiel, West Brom, PSG, and who else did you say? Barcelona. And then let's just say three players from Kiel get the coronavirus. What do you do then? Like, it's just, you're basically booking this event, booking the whole, the Lanxess Arena, selling tickets, and then you might have to cancel it because of that or get a substitute team to come in. It seems to be, until it's really like super, super low numbers, for me, it's very, very hard to envision anything happening. I don't mean to be too gloom and doom here, like, but...
No, I fully agree with you. Like, I think we will actually, individual countries will make it out of the quarantine quite soon. So these, you know, end of April, May, what's being talked about. I think, you know, full lockdown will probably be over in some countries at that stage. But traveling between countries won't happen for a long time. And holding events with 15,000 people will not happen for a very long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why all of these conversations, I know they have to happen. You know, people need to make contingency plans, people need to try to finish things, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, shaking hands before the games is over as well.
Elbows.
Elbows. It's elbows here on out. Like, what do you think, Chris?
As I said from the two podcasts ago, let's hire that boat and let's play it out on a cruise ship, secret tournament style. Let's do it.
Yeah.
No, I think your points are very well made. And yeah, I'm no doctor. We're no doctors. We can't. It's so difficult to predict anything at this time. Everything has been changing so much in such a quick period of time and getting worse over such a quick period of time. I can't imagine it will improve in that short amount of time either. But while we're having, for the majority of handball competitions being pushed back a few months and contingency plans being put in place for the late summer, we have the Olympic Games, which has been pushed back basically an entire year. So almost the exact same dates as were set to be played in 2020 is now going to be in 2021. And that's probably a wise enough choice. And at least in terms of handball, it doesn't get in the way very much, seeing as most of, or pretty much all of the major competitions are taking place in the wintertime. So for handball, doesn't have too much of a negative impact. And it means for, as you said before, guys, it's going to be a very, very busy season next season. But something to look forward to at least next summer.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you how serious this whole thing is, really, when the only Olympics that were cancelled before this were 1916, 1940, and 1944. You know, two world wars that caused the cancellation. And now we have this, which obviously isn't a world war, but it's a war in itself, I suppose, you know, against something you can't see. So it really just shows you how serious it is. But there was a lot of people talking about or surprised about how it took them a while to cancel it. They seemed a little bit reluctant. And I don't know what you guys thought of that. Did you feel that maybe that they were a little bit slow to the race? They were dragging their feet maybe a little bit?
It's a natural reaction because, again, this is a competition that's scheduled for July. And I presume that, you know, everyone until recently would have hoped that things are going to be over by July. But, you know, it quite quickly became apparent that that's not the case. And especially an event like the Olympics is just, you know, it's impossible to hold it with people traveling and stadiums and everything like that. It isn't going to happen. And I think it was the right decision to delay it to 2021. What I think is quite interesting is how do you think the handball teams, the teams that are going to be competing in the tournament, are going to be affected by this 1 year delay? So a good example is Spain. They were primed for this ride off into the sunset with a gold medal, goodbye golden generation, quite literally. And now Rallenterios is going to have to play another season, probably. Guys like Vera Morish and Guardiola, who are going to retire internationally, will have to play a world championship to get to the Olympics. So it just changes everything completely. But do you think, are there any teams that will benefit or suffer from this delay?
Well, I think, yeah, like you said, Spain are probably the most obvious ones that are going to suffer. But I think there's some French players who are also going to play out there, wanted to play one last Olympics possibly as well, who now might be that extra year older, may become a lot more difficult. Biggest winners and losers, though, I'd say. Well, obviously, Spain are the biggest losers. Biggest winners, though, maybe someone like, I don't know. I need to think about that. Chris, have you any ideas?
You said Spain there. I think for Spain, the men and women, they're both going to be in fairly perilous positions because the Spanish women's team average age is quite old as well. I think potential big winners there is, well, we'll see, maybe Norway, because it is still a fairly young team. And we saw the squad that they had in the Euro had a lot of talented young players who haven't really been integrated to the level needed, as we saw at the semifinals when they needed a real squad. We'll have Sander Sagerson having played a season in Kiel as well, which may probably shape him for the better, but we'll see also how he deals with the brutality of a full season in the Bundesliga. So that's difficult to say. Who else do we have that will be a real contender? Denmark, I think, probably won't be affected too negatively. What do you reckon?
Well, Morten Olsen has already come out and he has said that he's going to continue with the national team. So even though he's going to be a year older, that'll be a boost for him. I think Denmark actually might suffer. They do have a slightly older team. And maybe, what about a team like Portugal? You know, that
I was just about to say that. I was just thinking Portugal.
What about a team like Portugal, Brian?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, Alex. Thanks for the words out of my mouth. But I was thinking, when we were watching Portugal over the last 2 years and how much they've improved, you'd like to think that another year of them playing together and improving at the same trajectory will only be a good thing for them. That would be my initial thought anyway.
They'll have more than likely have a world championship under their belts at that stage. They still have to qualify, and that's the case with a lot of these teams. They still have to qualify, which is no guarantee in the group that they're in with France. And yeah, I just want to have a look at the qualification groups, actually, and because I think that that is a big role to play as well. We have Norway will qualify or should qualify fairly handily. They're in a group with Brazil, Chile, and South Korea. Then it's France, Croatia, and Portugal. Croatia's a side there, which is another interesting one as well. So Lino Cervar has said he'll continue for another year. So he's going to continue until the Olympics. He was planning on leaving after the Olympics this summer. I don't know if he can add too much to this team over the next year. And it's also a team which is fairly, I would say, is aging somewhat when it comes to the key players. Oh, yeah, the case is that they have to qualify as well. So in that group, you have France, Croatia, and Portugal in there. So one of those three will not qualify for the Olympics. And it's also the case with the group in Berlin, where you have Germany, Sweden, and Slovenia. And I think that probably, that situation, probably all three teams would be quite happy with. Because with Slovenia, they have Ljubo Vranjes, who they only had for a couple of months. And yeah, they did have a Euro under their belt, a very successful championship for them. But they'd like some more time together. Sweden, they have a new coach in as well, who would have had no time before the Olympic qualifiers. And same with Germany, with Gislason coming in with no time to prepare before the qualifiers. So both of those teams will have a whole year of training camps, qualification matches, then the World Championship next January ahead of them to prepare. So I think in Germany and Sweden's case, they'll be quite happy.
I just thought about the World Championships that are going to happen before the new Olympics. So what's going to happen? Because Denmark are current world champions and they've qualified for the Olympics. And then in 2021, we're going to have new world champions.
Yeah, I don't think that'll have any part to play now. I think they'll stick to the same qualification rules. Under these rules, the world champion and the Euro champion in 2019 and 2020 qualify. I don't think they'll take 2021 to consideration there.
So, right, Portugal go out and win the world championship, and then they lose their playoff to go to the Olympics, and then they just they don't have a spot in the Olympics. Oh my god.
Yeah. They'll be gutted.
Well, not poor Portugal if they've won the World Championship in 2021.
Yeah, yeah. No, but you want that Olympic medal, like, you know. That's the number one thing in sport, isn't it? Like, you know. But this is not really directly now handball related, but I was just reading some numbers about the Olympics, and I think that might come back to a reason why the Olympics were kind of dragging their feet a little bit for a few days before they cancelled it. I was reading that Japan has spent 20 billion, so double the budget of the last Olympics on stuff so far. It cost 2.7 billion to postpone it. The IOC gets 6 billion from streaming rights, and that's not even including all the underhand payments they get. NBC have sold $1.2 billion worth of advertising. A lot of those advertisements have already been made and set, and now they can't use any of that stuff anymore. And so, like, that just shows you, like, I think that's maybe a reason why it took kind of maybe a little bit longer for them to decide to cancel this, because that just shows you the massive business aspect of the whole thing that goes into it. There was maybe business before people a little bit there for a few days, but some incredible numbers there, huh?
Yeah, and it's a huge, huge deal. I mean, the right up to the Japanese Prime Minister, who has basically made this like his lifetime achievement as the head of the government, to actually bring the Olympics to Japan and also to be there when it takes place. I mean, he may not be there by the time the Olympics come around next year. So I think that's why they wanted to drag their heels a bit. And also, the situation in Japan doesn't quite seem as serious as it is elsewhere. But when you've got one healthy country, as I think Alex was mentioning before, that really doesn't help the situation, because you have millions of people coming in from around the world and over 10,000 athletes coming in from around the world as well, where the situation may be dire. So, yeah, I think it took a bit of time for them to come to the right decision. But I think delaying it by a year is a good one.
But they announced yesterday that the numbers in Japan has had massive spikes since they announced that they're going to postpone the Olympics. So there's now a whole conspiracy there's some former politicians saying that they intentionally tried to cover it up
right.
Because they wanted to keep the Olympics on, you know. So because their numbers online, you can't really find them anywhere, but the official postings from the individual hospitals and stuff, they've seen a pretty big spike since they announced that they're postponing the Olympics.
Yeah.
20 billion would do that to you. 20 billion.
20 billion would do that to you, yeah.
Yeah, it really makes the EHF Final Four look quite insignificant in revenue and impact.
Well, actually, going back to the Final Four briefly before we move on, and there was some big news coming out this morning, and we're recording on Wednesday on April 1st, and big news on Hand News, where they claim that the French teams were going to be kicked out of European competitions due to their unhappiness with the current situation. And Alex posted it in our WhatsApp group with amazement before realizing that it is April 1st, April Fool's Day, and realizing it maybe 4 or 5 seconds after you posted it in the group. Can you tell us what went through your mind there, Alex?
So it was early. It was before my first cup of coffee. I was aware that it was April Fool's. And it was just a well-executed story. I got to give it to Hand News France. They got me. They got me.
That's even worse. You shouldn't have said that detail. You actually knew it was April Fool's and then you still fell for it.
Completely. I was literally just talking over breakfast about the morning's the best time to get people because they don't realize yet. But I know myself, so I'm going to be good.
I know myself. Anyway, what's going on in Hand News? Wow.
Personally, I thought today would be kind of like an international truce, that people really wouldn't be in the mood for April Fools, given what's going on in the world. But after what Alex went through, that one made me smile, yeah.
I actually haven't seen that much. The only thing I have seen is parents leading their children to school and telling them that school is back on.
That's terrible.
Getting them in the uniform, school bag on, the full coat, leading them to the gate, and then telling them that it's April Fool's. That's been pretty good.
Yeah, or April Fool's, in other words, how to lose your parents' trust or your child's trust in one day, in 10 minutes a day.
So one more thing I want to talk about, and that might be beneficial to all our listeners as well. With everything that's happening and all of us being stuck at home, there's been a huge amount of home workouts, also in the handball world. And I want to get your opinion, guys, on your favorite home workout from the handball people as well. It can be outside of handball, but particularly handball coaches and players, and what you're seeing from people posting online that has piqued your interest and maybe inspired you to get a bit of workout done at home.
My favorite one wasn't actually a workout. It was Valentine Port trying to have that chocolate race with his dog. And that was pretty funny. I was like, God, he's really losing his mind. I was like, this is great to see that top level athletes can also go a little bit nuts. I thought it was just me saying good morning to myself every morning and was losing it. But actually, no, some top athletes also can lose their minds. So that was probably my favorite one. That already did about 90,000 stories of people making sourdough bread. I was like, okay, I get it. I like to make bread. Do you know, that was that was a bit annoying after some time.
I think banana bread has been the other one. Banana bread, which isn't actually that nice, but everyone's fucking making it.
You've made some of the best stuff out there, though. I must say that. Like, there was something you made the other day. I was like thinking, that actually looks absolutely delicious. I think it was yesterday's meal, was it?
Hashtag Corona Cooks, everyone. Hashtag Corona Cooks.
Yeah. What about you, Alex?
I have been inspired by Kenton Mahe, as always, because he's been basically training from home for 2 months with his injury. And the level of sweat that he's able to do working from his living room is pretty impressive. And generally, that whole Veszprém team is working pretty hard.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that. One way we will be able to come out very, very quickly would be if they come up with some sort of treatment for this. I don't mean a vaccine. A vaccine is pretty far away, but a treatment would be very quick. And let's just say they have a very quick, efficient treatment that they bring out in the next 2 months, next few weeks even. And they're able to, it's going to be very interesting to see that you have a lot of players who aren't doing any of the home workouts and have to go play a Final Four and be mixed in with all the guys, the really motivated guys. And some guys with maybe a little bit of a belly coming back for the...
I think Stoilov will have to retire. Just, he'll never get back from this.
I'll never get off the couch.
We've had a good run, lads. Vardar's shutting down anyway.
Yeah, they won't be at the Final Four, that's for sure. You know who's really good on posting workouts, usually in the gym, like handball-specific ones, and some stuff he can actually do at home now as well, is the, I think he's the strength and conditioning coach for the Vipers, Chris Jansand. Coach_ALO14. And he posts a hell of a lot of stuff from the Vipers gym, usually anyway, and putting up a lot of stuff as well, which is very handball specific, and doing it with players from the Vipers team. So that's worth checking out. And also the Chris Jansand sisters, who have seem to have got addicted to TikTok these days.
Handball Hour TikTok coming up. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Oh, God.
40-second podcasts so. Coming your way.
I think we stick to what we know, shall we?
Okay, so we'll leave it there for today. This was episode 72 of the Uniformed Handball Hour. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time.